Here we're on Perek Hey Pasuk Yud. Now this is great because now we're really getting into David HaMelech being king. All the other options are gone. Binyamin is gone. And now David HaMelech is the official king. So it says in Pasuk Yud, Vayelech David, Haloch V'gadol, V'Hashem Elokei Tzevaot Imo. So we say that David HaMelech was getting greater and greater. Things were just getting more and more as it went through. And nonetheless, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he felt that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was with him. David HaMelech felt like he was the chariot for God's presence. He didn't feel like this was his own. He was doing his own thing. He felt like he was there helping HaKadosh Baruch Hu get greater and greater and greater. David grew increasingly great over here. The idea is that this was deserved. It was justly deserved. And he felt like it was HaKadosh Baruch Hu giving him rachamim everywhere that's over here. This is an amazing line that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives for David. Pasuk Yud Aleph.
Even though just previous, he was like being almost punished for the way he was acting.
Well, that might be because of the way that he was trying to speak to the other people and how it went through. But since he became king, it's been a positive. When he became the full king. Vayishlach Hiram Melech Tzor. Hiram, the king of Tzor, sent Malachim el David, some messengers to David. Va'atzia razum mechorshe eitz. There was cedar wood with them, as well as carpenters of wood. V'chorashe evan, as well as carpenters of stone. Kir, that knew how to make walls, etc. But you know, Ba'iz L'David. And they decided they were going to build a house for David HaMelech. Hiram Melech Tzor is an enigmatic character that appears in a few places. The Medrash quotes this, but it's not a quoted Medrash, not a Medrash Rabbah, not a Medrash Tanchuma, that Hiram is Chira Ho'adulami, and therefore would be the oldest person in like Tanakh by far. Right? He was about 1,200 years old. He was the friend of Yehuda.
He ended up living even after the 800
so
years after
he would have been
so
right.
Like 2000.
He would have been until the end of the first Beis HaMikdash. That's how long he lived. If he went all the way through, that this is Mamish, the friend of Yehuda, he would have been the oldest person by far. There's no question Tzor is on the Mediterranean coast. It's the city known as Tyre in Lebanon. Hiram lived in this area, which is now filled with trees and whatever it was, and they had experts when it came down to your masons, carpenters, all those types of people. They were the ones who wanted to build a house for David HaMelech himself. Hiram Melech Tzor was always a king of the Davidic kingdom, maybe because of his previous
the
relationship, if you want to
the
say,
Davidic
through Gilgulim. No, always friends with the Davidic, with the kingdom. And maybe because of his previous situation with Yehuda, or however you want to call it, but Hiram was perfectly fine with David HaMelech. There were never any issues that we have seen in which there were armies from Tzor coming down.
That at the end of his life, he declared himself a god because he got
that was an issue. After, when we get to the area of Yechezkel, that's where it came into a problem, which is already by the times of Gullus, after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. But not now. Right now, Hiram seems to be a great person, and he helps out Shlomo Melech entirely. If it's the same Hiram, it might not be the same Hiram. Hiram might be the name of the kings of Tzor, and each
Paro
king was named that name, like
Paro
or Abimelech, etc. Which makes sense shot-wise that he didn't live for 1,400 years. What do you mean we see people living 1,400 years all the time? But Yeda David, Ki Achino Hashem LeMelech Yisrael. Now David understood he was made king over Bnei Yisrael. V'chinise Mamlachto Bavor Amo Yisrael. And that the kingdom was exalted for the people of Bnei Yisrael. Again, there are many people who refer to themselves, they look at themselves as a figure of authority. David HaMelech saw himself as, again, the emissary of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a servant of the people, so to speak. And he understood himself as that way. And Bavur Amo Yisrael. And that was the little bit of a nivus that came from over here. Okay, Shaul never got this acclaim from everyone else, says Rashi. Never got this acclaim. Nobody looked at Shaul and said, you're king, whatever. They knew that Hashem had made him king, and he was an awesome guy and taller than everybody else. David HaMelech understood, and the people showed him that they truly wanted him as king. And he understood this was really a message from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Pasuk Yud Gimel, Yikach David Ol Pilagshim, V'Nashim Yerushalayim. He took other concubines and wives from Yerushalayim. Achorei Bo Mechavron, after he had come from Chevron. V'Yevodu Ol David Banim Ubanos, and there were many, many other sons and daughters born to him. Chazal says something very interesting here. If you notice, David took more pilagshim, first concubines, and then nashim, and then wives, right? After he came from Chevron. Now, we already know that he had six wives. We already talked about those six wives, and we already mentioned the children that he had from those six wives, some of the children that he had from those six wives. The difference between a concubine and a wife is, simply put, a wife is somebody who has kiddushin ahali. You have somebody who has kiddushin as well as a ksuva, while a concubine is somebody that you don't have either. You're designated for each other, but in theory, the concubine does not have to live by you. You could have other things. David HaMelech was allowed 18 wives, and Chazal argue if you're allowed 18 wives and however many concubines as you want, or is it 18 wives and concubines together? Is it together altogether? It seems from Shlomo Melech that it was only 18 wives and concubines combined. If that's so, Chazal tell us that David had 8 wives, 10 concubines. We had 6 wives mentioned earlier, the ones that we know about, Michal, Ahinoam. We know about Abigail, right? We know about Eglah, although Eglah and Michal may be the exact same person. We know about, what's her name? Bathsheba, who he is not married yet. Yeah, Bathsheba, who he is not married yet.
He took Nashim, so by, he has...
So it could be it's referring to the future and referring to Bathsheba as well, right? But I'm forgetting the other two, but Shvatia, but Avital. Avital?
Avshalom's mother. What was her name?
Macha bas Talmai, right? Macha bas Talmai, and that's 7 right there. That's 7 right there. And the concubines, we know none of their names. We know none of their names. Perhaps the concubines are mentioned first because he married them before he married the other wives, right? It's also the Rambam paskins from over here that Pilagshim can only be had by a king. He actually goes into a very interesting thing about Pilegesh Begiva because of it. All the Meforshei Rambam ask the Rambam, how could the Levi, the Ish Levi, have Pilegesh Begiva? How could he have a Pilegesh if it's only by a king? There's a couple answers to that. That's not important for right now, but it's possible from over here, yeah.
Is it possible to start with a concubine and then make her a wife?
So it's interesting. I don't remember the Rambam saying that we did that in Hilchos Shoftim. I don't remember the Rambam saying that it was a problem. It could be that he had a Pilegesh first, that David HaMelech married the Pilegeshim first and then married Nashim at some point. We only know of the wives, but it could be he did that. I don't know if that's a problem.
Can a Pilegesh be elevated to wife status?
Oh, to wife status? Yes. The answer is with a Ksuva. Yeah, with a regular Kedushin and Ksuva. At any point, that could happen. And it could be the reason why concubines are mentioned first is simply put because they outnumbered the wives, 10-8. So that's the reason why. Anyway, Pasuk Yudale, Ve'elish Mosei Yilod and Lo B'Yerushalayim. These are the children that he had in Yerushalayim. Shamua, Shovav, Nasan, and Shlomo. Obviously, we don't know, but it's possible this was Shlomo HaMelech himself. Obviously, this is much later because he hasn't married Bathsheba yet. Yivchar, that's 5. Elishua, Nefeg, Yafia. Altogether, that's 8. Elishama, Elyada, and Eliphalet. Okay, so those were the children that he had over here. Okay? It's interesting, the Radak says there's another Eliphalet. It seems weird, but David HaMelech may have had 2 children by the same name. Now, I guess if you have that many kids, you forget after a while. Divrei HaYamim mentions Eliphalet twice. Wow. And there's Noga as well. The Radak points them both out and says there may have been 2 kids. Anyway, Vayishmo Pelishim Kimashko was David HaMelech HaYisrael. So the Pelishim...
Well, yeah, because he said there one could have died in there.
It could be also, and then he named another kid by that. But that's also a strange thing. Well,
it could have been named after the same person.
Sefer Hasidim holds that you do not name a child after someone who died at an early age, especially a child of your own that died at an early age. It would be very strange that he named another child by that name. Not impossible. It's possible.
I know somebody.
But it's just strange.
I know somebody, they had a daughter, and they liked 2 names, so they gave her 2 names. And then they had like their youngest daughter like, a few years later, and so they gave her the middle name of
the middle name of their previous child?
Yeah.
And the child was alive.
Yeah, they're Sephardic, so it's
Sephardim,
all
Sephardim. I don't even know why they give names, right? Why even bother giving names?
They asked the older daughter, like, is it okay if we give
is it okay? Unbelievable. I'd love to hear if there's a tshuva on that. That's amazing. I've never heard of that before. That is absolutely amazing. I love that. Absolutely. I remember asking my brother if it was okay of using a name that he used for his kids, if I could use that for my own child, right? Because it was a childhood name. He didn't need it. I just wanted to make sure that he was okay with it, you know, just be a nice guy. But I can't even imagine. That's amazing. Absolutely amazing. Okay, so what we've ignored this entire time is that remember how Shaul HaMelech was killed? Shaul HaMelech was killed at the end of Shmuel Aleph by a Plishti war, and the Plishtim won the battle. And David HaMelech is named king, and we've totally ignored the Plishtim. Totally ignored them. Like, the Plishtim are still around, right? And Achish, the king of the Plishtim, is still around. But Yishmu Plishtim Kimashko as David, Lamelech HaYisrael. The Plishtim all of a sudden heard that David HaMelech was named king over all Bnei Yisrael. It's unbelievable. For 7 years, they had already had the battles between Ish-bosheth and David, and the Plishtim are silent. We don't see them. We don't hear from them. We have no idea what's going on. But now they hear that he's king over Israel. The Alakol Plishtim Levakish to David. The Plishtim came up to seek David. Vayishma David v'yirad al Matsuda. David HaMelech heard about it, and they went down to the Matsuda. He went down to the stronghold over here. Again, the Plishtim were wondering, is David on our side still? After all, he fought with us in Achish. Is he upset at us? Is he happy with us? They weren't sure exactly what to do. There was a treaty officially between Achish and Dovid, which is why Dovid never fought them and never did anything whatsoever. But they had no idea. When they came in with sort of sentries to see what was going on. Is there anything that we should get involved with? No. Is there anything right around there? The Das Sofrim says the Yavusim that they had just fought in order to take over Ir David in Yerushalayim, the Yavusim were actually Plishtim. They weren't Yavusim. They were actual Plishtim that had originally made a deal with Avram Avinu years and years and years ago. We talked about that last time. They weren't actual Yavusim. They married into Yavusi tribes, and they had some Yavusi people, but they were actually Plishtim. So the Plishtim came around to David Melech to say, hey, I thought you had a treaty with us. They went in to go see, and David Melech immediately went into battle mode. He went into the Metsuda. He went into his fortress, waiting to fight against the Plishtim. The Plishtim understood. So by Plishtim bow, so the Plishtim then came. Now we have a whole army of the Plishtim that came.
Call Plishtim, all the Plishtim. That would include Achish.
That's
no?
correct. It sounds like it would be almost all of them, right? By Inachu be'emek Rephaim, and they spread out by Emek Rephaim, which still exists today, right? By Emek Rephaim, which is the street, the valley of the giants. They stayed in that area. Vayishal Dovid Hashem Lamor. So Dovid HaMelech, as he always did. I'm sorry? Same Emek Rephaim. Really? It's the same area because Derech Chavron is still the same area. It's amazing. But that really was the original thing. The stores weren't there back then, right? The restaurants
you
were there.
You couldn't go get...
I heard that. I was shocked as well.
Then?
I was shocked. No. And that pizza sababa?
Sumo burger.
Right, not there. No, it's not. Vayishal David Ba'ashem Lamor. That's why they were fighting. Vayishal David Ba'ashem Lamor. David Melech asked the Kaddish Baruch Hu saying, and again, this is the Urim Metumim, because he knew he had to ask the question, Ha'alala Plishtim? Should I go to the Plishtim? Hasitnem Biyadi? Will you put them in my hands? Vayomer Shemal David Hashem said to David, Ale, go up. I will give the Plishtim into your hands. David and David hit them there. Hashem is broken through my enemies. The way that water crashes through. And that's why they call the area Baal Pratzim. Okay.
Did he ask him two questions?
Yuma Ayin Gimel Med Aleph points out, you never ask the Urim Bitumim two questions. Dovid HaMelech just asked two questions at once. He said, should I go up against the Plishtim? Will you put them in my hands? Says Yuma Ayin Gimel Med Aleph, if the question you're asking is essentially the same one, you can ask two questions. And what he was asking is, should I go up against the Plishtim? Will you allow me to win? That's essentially the same question. It also answers another one. We had a problem by Pilegesh Begiva, because when they asked the question of the Urim Bitumim, they didn't give the other side. They said, should we fight B'nai Binyamin? They didn't say, should we fight them or not? You have to go the other side. It could be that this is what David HaMelech meant when he said, should I go up against the Plishtim, will I win that war? It's, should I go up against the Plishtim, will I win, or will I not win so I shouldn't go up? It's as if he was asking both sides. That's how the Gemara 9 Gimel Med Aleph says over here. Okay. Baal Peratzim seems to be an actual mountain with Emek Rephaim on one side, right, and the Jews' battle camp on the other side. The Baal Peratzim was right there in the middle over there.
There's a street next to Emek called Haporatzim.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's in Katamon.
That's interesting, actually. It very well could be that this is referring to over here. Now, I want to point something out, again, against the Plishtim. I don't know what the Plishtim were thinking. You never hide your army in a valley. That's very silly, because anybody who's on higher ground has the advantage, because you're always looking down and gravity is on your side. The dumber thing to do is be in the valley. The Plishtim were either super confident that they were going to win this war, or what it meant was that they were on the other side of Emek Rephaim, on the mountain side, on the other side, Emek Rephaim in the middle, and the Jews were on Baal Peratzim over there. And now I'm not sure, but it does say they were camped in Emek Rephaim, which is extremely silly. It seems to be an extremely silly thing to be able to go. Okay. I'm sorry? Not if they knew about it. If they already knew about it, the Emek Rephaim. And Emek Rephaim was the way to go to where Ir David is. That was the road. It was either that or Derech Chavron. It was the clear way to go. It would be strange that they did it. The wording of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is also weird. Remember, we're dealing with the Urim Bitumim. This is not a Nevuah. Nason etain es haplishtim biyadcha. The actual word, Nason etain, is unnecessary. When we see the Urim Bitumim talking in the Chumash, usually it's like one or two words. Because that's the words popped out in front of you and you saw the lit up letters in front of you. That's what you usually saw. Kinason etain es haplishtim biyadcha is a long time. Like, it just took a long time to be able to write that down. It would be a weird way to say it. What does that mean exactly? So I don't have a good answer for that. It could be that this is how the Pasuk is translating what the Urim Vitumim said, and that's the idea behind it. It could be that it actually was a larger answer, and there was a bunch of things over here. Chazal tells us, and it's a medrash, that not only was the nation put in the hands of Bnei Yisrael, of David HaMelech, but also the Malach was placed in the hands of the Malachim of Klal Yisrael. So in other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'll give the angel in your hands, and I'll give the nation in your hands. And that's why it's a double Lashon over here, but it is very, very strange, the wording of how it says over there. Some say the Baal Peratim refers to the Plishti soldiers that were hiding on the mountain. There were soldiers that were there, and they had little battles, skirmishes on that battle, so on that mountain, so that David HaMelech could take over the top of the mountain. And they called the Baal Peratim. It's as if they struck them, as if they were paruts, like paruts is to knock out. They knocked out the extra spies or whatever the Plishtim had up there. Pasuk Chaf Aleph, Vayazu Shamas Atzabeim. They left their idols there. Vayisaim David Vanashav. David and his servants took all of those, and the word Vayisaim can be translated in many different ways. Vayisaim seems to be he burned them. He burned those idols. Now, Chazal say that they left their idols out of embarrassment. They didn't really believe in them in the first place. If you remember, the Plishtim believed in an idol called Dagon, which still exists today. In the Republic of Mali, they still worship this idol. They have Dagon, this half-man, half-fish. And they have these tiny little idols that represent Dagon. They still have it. You can look it up online. They still have those tiny little idols. It could be that's the type of stuff that they had. Vayisaim does not have to be burned, though. It could be they carried them back to Yerushalayim to show everybody the futility of idol worship and how destructive it was. Some say they might have even buried them. And that's what it means, they carried them, put them around. But now the Gemara says an unbelievable line. Since it says the word Vayisaim, Itai Hagiti is going to have a prominent place when David Melech runs away from Avshalom many years later. Itai Hagiti joined David's forces at this time. At the time, he was with the Plishtim, but they captured a bunch of people. Itai Hagiti went on his side. I'm sorry? He was not Jewish, and therefore he had the ability to be mevatel the Avodah Zarah. Normally, a Jew cannot be mevatel the Avodah Zarah of a Goy, but Itai Hagiti was able to do so. He nullified the Avodah Zarah that was there, which meant that they no longer had to bury them or destroy them. They could keep them, because the Avodah Zarah was no longer Avodah Zarah. So whatever they were made out of, the gold, the silver, the whatever it was, he did that. They destroyed it, or he destroyed it, and therefore they were able to carry it off. Art scroll brings down, it could be that they burned them at first, and then Itai said, what are you doing? Let me be mevatel it. He cut off parts of it, and therefore they were able to carry the rest back. So it really is both. They burned some, and they carried back the rest of it. Either way, Vaisifu od plishim lalos v'inashu be'emek Rephaim. Plishim came up again. They spread out again in Emek Rephaim. This time again, not Kol Plishtim. As you pointed out before, Binyamin, it's not all of them. They decided they were going to do battle by battle by battle, but this time only the strong warriors came. I know, yeah, definitely. This time it's not. And now, Chav Gimel, Vayishal David Ba'ashem Vayomer. Right? David HaMelech asked of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Hashem said the following. Now listen to this. Lo Saleh, don't go up. Lo Saleh, don't go up. Hasev al Achareyam, turn behind. Uvasla Mimol Bechaim, and hit them from opposite the Bechaim. Vayi kishama acha es kol tzada, when you hear a rustling sound, Barashe Bechaim, on the top of those baka trees, oz techarat, then get yourselves up, kiaz yotza Hashem levenecha, that's when Hashem is in front of you, lahakos b'machane plishtim, to strike the plishti camp. Again, I had no idea the Urim Bitumim could do this. That the Urim Bitumim was able to make entire sentences we've never seen before. But this is an entire sentence. Now, if it's a Nevuah, you're right. It could very well be it's not. And it's referring to a Nevuah and a Navi. And I would tell you it's even more likely now. Because the Urim Bitumim doesn't do this. Normally, you can't see something like this. But what I find the most amazing about this pasuk is, even though he already asked a Kadosh Baruch Hu, in the second battle, he asked again. He did not rely on the first line that he was given the first time. He said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, should I do it or should I not do it? Again, that shows the power of David HaMelech. He really wanted to go through. Maybe it was to strengthen themselves. when they went through it. But I will tell you what's amazing about this is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was giving them strategies of war. Hashem should just tell them, you'll win, you'll not win. But there's a test here. There's a test. You have to go behind them. You have to fight from the Baca trees. And there's a reason for it. There's an obvious reason. If everybody remembers, Shaul HaMelech, when he became king, was told by Shmuel HaNavi to wait a little bit, wait until the seventh day to fight, and I'm going to come. Don't bring any korbanos until I get there, and then you're going to go ahead and fight. He gave him that law, and Shaul HaMelech had to wait, and he couldn't. On the seventh day, his army began to desert him, so he felt pressured, so he brought the korbanos, and then Shmuel HaNavi came, and he said, did you see? I waited as long as I could. I just couldn't wait anymore. And Shmuel HaNavi said, that's not what Hashem wants. And he was upset. David HaMelech is being tested in a very similar fashion. Are you going to listen to me even though it doesn't make any sense or not? David HaMelech said, okay, guys, this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu told me. We have to go behind and fight from behind. The people probably looked at David and said, what are you, nuts? If Hashem wants us to win, we'll win no matter what we do. We don't have to go and do strategies. Let's just fight them straight out. So they probably looked at David and said, this is crazy. David HaMelech had a choice now. Was he going to listen to the people or was he going to listen to the Nevuah? David was strong enough to listen to the Nevuah and do exactly what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, even though the Plishtim were ready to fight and his warriors were waxing and saying, I don't know. I don't know if this is a good idea. David HaMelech said, I'm doing what Hashem told me to do. Anyone who wants to follow me, follow me. I don't care if it's just me. I'm doing what HaKadosh Baruch Hu told me to do. You guys can do whatever you want to do. And David HaMelech obviously was correct. And for that, he was allowed to do exactly, he's allowed to do everything there. Now what happened? It's kind of cool. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made it sound, from the sound, the rustling over the trees, it sounded like a huge whistle, as if there were massive troops that were coming along with David. When in fact, the truth was, it was a small garrison that David HaMelech had with him. I don't know if the other people backed away, or if he was only told to take a few people with him. But it sounded like that. The Plishtim went crazy. They started fighting each other, and David HaMelech barely had to lift a finger before finding the entire army knocked down in front of him, which is absolutely amazing. Could be that the rustling of the treetops also camouflaged the sound of David HaMelech's troops going from behind. Yeah, maybe it didn't sound
like
that way.
It was his troops that were killing Plishtim, and it was a very long Arbo Achag Gazer is thus far.
It does sound like it was a long way. And again, that's part of the test. Are you willing to do this when everybody is out? Geva is by Giva. That's Pilagish by Giva. So it's a few, maybe like 10, 15 miles away from Yerushalayim. Something like that. Up in the Binyamin's area, a little bit farther north.
Further up. I like...
So right around there. So it'd be there. But either way, there's no question David HaMelech was told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to wait. He did exactly what he was supposed to do. He was not willing to go. And you can imagine, as they're standing there, right, waiting for everything to happen, right, the troops are sitting there like, we should fight now. Let's fight now. It could even be that the Plishtim were advancing toward them. It could even be. We don't know. And David HaMelech said, I didn't hear the rustling on top of the treetops. I'm not moving until I hear the rustling on top of the treetops. And when that finally happened, he was able to make his army go. Until that point, he would not go through. And he said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's fighting for us anyway. Oh, I have it right over here. I'm sorry, right over here. So you can see right here, there's, if everybody can see from right here, Yerushalayim's right there, right? They were coming from Hebron. David's force is going up through Beis Lechem, right over there. Valley of Rephaim is right there. The Plishti force was going right around there. Chased them to Giva, Ramal, right over there, upper Beis Horon, lower Beis Horon, and they fled that way toward Gezer. You're correct. So Gezer is all the way over there. We have Gibon, Giva, Ramah, Mitzpeh, Yerushalayim's right there, Beis Lechem. So to get an idea, Zanoach, Yarmus, etc. So that's where they ended up going through. Really cool. That's the idea behind it. Beit Shemesh, that's where Ramah Beit Shemesh is for those nowadays.
Well, there's a
the stores didn't exist there right there. Yeah, Kirz Arim Telstone.
Like there.
Correct. So like the Highway 1 is like right there, the new train. We can go through. We have everything. But that's the idea of how they were able to fight, and that's the idea behind it. So again, how did this work? Listen to this, what the Niam Loi says. It's crazy. HaKadosh Baruch Hu may have designed this planet, I'm quoting the Niam Loi on this, because he saw the astrological signs and understood they were not in Bnei Yisrael's favor. From the position of the constellation at the time, the Plishtim were going to be victorious. Seeing as it was possible, it was preferable to save the Jews by means of a strategy inspired by Hashem than to work a miracle to change the natural order of things. Could HaKadosh Baruch Hu have gone against the Mazalos? Yeah, but he didn't want to. So he changed what the Jews would do so they could win this war. As I've said before, and it's really a Gemara, Ein Mazal Yisrael, means we have a mazel. There is such a thing as mazel in constellations in the world that affect us. But we're above that in that we can change it, while not everybody has that ability. But Bnei Yisrael definitely has the ability to change it, and that goes through there. A baka tree, by the way, the bacha tree over here, could be a thorn bush. It could be a berry tree. It could be a pear tree. Personally, I had no idea there were pear trees in Eretz Yisrael. I had absolutely
like
no idea.
A tree that would be big. You heard the rustling of the trees.
Rustling
the
trees on
and
top.
Hiding behind it.
So if it's a berry tree, it would have to be a very tall berry tree. I don't know what trees that would be. You know, regular berries.
Pear trees are known to grow tall and the branches straight up.
And the branches straight up. That
There's
would be perfect for this.
On the corner of Sacramento and Tui.
Those are pear trees? Oh, I didn't even know that.
You never did birdhouse last
time? Yeah, I always saw them when there were flowers. I never saw the actual fruits. Yeah, I always made them.
No, you could eat the pears.
Go up. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Vayas David Cain. David did exactly the kashrut of Hashem, like Hashem commanded him to do. Vayachas plishim gevad boacha gozer. He smote them from Geva all the way to the approaches of Gezer. He did everything that a kashrut wanted him to do, and he was able to defeat the plishim. Okay. Now in Perek Vav. Vayuzvo David is kol bachar bi Yisrael shloshim alav. David Melech then gathered 30,000 men of Bnei Yisrael all together, and it says in Pasuk Beis, Vayakam Melech David kol amasher. He told me Bali Yehuda lalos mishamas Aaron elokim. David Melech then went and gathered the people that were with him from Bali Yehuda to bring up the Aron Elokim, after he knew that the Plishtim were no longer a factor, because remember, they're the ones who captured the Aron last time, they were no longer a factor, he went to go bring up that Aron Elokim, Hashem Nikra Shem, that were called the name, Shem Hashem Tzvakos Yoshev HaKruv Malav, the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Master of Legions, who sat upon the Kruvim, upon that. Why that name is used over here, we'll talk about in a second, but there's a lot to talk about over here. Now, when we say he brought warriors, to me, that sounds a little strange. You're going to bring warriors to bring the Aron Kodesh? Well, the simple explanation is, yes, he was worried about the Plishtim. So in order to make sure that the Plishtim were not going to try to take the Aron back
police escort
from where it was, he had a police escort. That would... The Plishtim themselves. But David didn't know what they were going to do. And this is a little bit later, maybe 10 years later from when that happened, 15 years later. He wasn't sure what they were going to do. So he had an escort just in case to make sure that nobody else is going to be there. However, Chazal tell us in the Gemara that this is not referring to warriors, but to Talmidei Chachamim. He gathered 30,000 scholars, all these Talmidei Chachamim, gave them smicha, this is how the Yerushalmi says it, gave them smicha, gave them their ordination, and allowed them to punish even criminal law, which means dine mamonis, that they could do even that, gave them actual smicha.
Dine mamonis is civil.
Is it?
Criminal.
Oh, yeah. Criminal is what? That's
dine fashos.
So they were able to do civil law and allowed them to do even dine knossos. Why would you know,
knossos
lawyer?
Is,
yeah,
knossos, those
fines
knossos,
and stuff
right,
like that.
It could be criminal also.
Yeah. Oh, I guess so. Yeah, I mean, depending on what they do. Ones, right? But that's that. And then it says, if you notice, oh, by Yosef owed. Not only were there already 30,000 already ordained Talmidei Chachamim Klal Yisrael, he added on another 30,000, doubling it up so there were 60,000. Some say he doubled up by Yosef is one, and Ode again, he made 90,000 Talmidei Chachamim scholars in that day, all with smicha, and brought them all around and went around over here. Either way, regardless, the idea is from they try saying from Ya'alots, from the word Ya'alots in Parak Lamed in Divrei Yamin, he goes, Ya'alot is supposed to be referred to the 90. Either way, regardless, the Yerushalmi says, out of those 90,000 sages that he made, there was one man that was conspicuously missing from the smicha practice. He did not give smicha to Achitofel. His chief advisor, Achitofel, that we'll see later on, he did not give smicha to Achitofel. When David HaMelech took, when they first took, he had the people take the Aron Kodesh, it flung the Kohanim to the ground. David called for Achitofel and said, what's going on? Why is the Aron Kodesh throwing the Kohanim to the ground? So Achitofel said, why didn't you call me to go get smicha? Where were you when everybody else was getting smicha and you didn't give me smicha? Right? Those people should counsel. You have 90,000 people you just gave smicha to. Let them tell you what to do over here. David Melech was not amused. He said, if you don't tell me, I will put you to death. To which Achitofel replied and said, bring a korban and everything will stop. And that's why he started bringing korbanos in front of the Aron to make sure that it would be over there. Unbelievable, right? What a medrash. I don't know what the meaning of this medrash is. In other words, I don't know what this refers to.
There's another medrash of Ahitofel also when he's digging the...
The Shisin. We haven't gotten to that, but you're right. I think the meaning behind this medrash is that David HaMelech never fully trusted Ahitofel. That Ahitofel was a tremendous scholar, and he was a tremendous Talmud Chacham, and David HaMelech knew that when he needed something, he'd go to him, but he never trusted him as one of his real...
According to the Medrash that says he was 34 when he died, then Ahitofel is not even born here. Or maybe he's one.
Oh, no, he would have been, because 37, 38. So 38 plus 70, he would have been maybe 8, 9 years old. Maybe 8, 9 years old.
How would he even be that old?
Well, he died at 68 when David was 68.
Right. So he was 34 then, and now David HaMelech, did he make it to Yerushalayim at this point?
No. Because he made Ir David. Who knows? Yeah, the years might be a little bit off. He might have been, though, 15, 16 years old. You might be right. He might be young, super young, when it goes through here. No question, though, everybody disagreed with what's going to happen here. David HaMelech is going to be punished by what's going to happen right over here. Okay, bolstering the forces we already talked about over here. Now, the next thing is there's some pretty unbelievable ideas that happen according to Divrei HaYamim. In Divrei HaYamim, it says that all of Bnei Yisrael went to Bala, not just the 90,000 Talmidei Chacham that we talk about over here. All of Bnei Yisrael went to Bala. And from Bala, they went near Kiryas Arim in order to get the Aron Kodesh from right over there. It could be that all of Bnei Yisrael went to Bala in order to greet the Aron Kodesh. But David HaMelech brought 90,000 of the people, the Talmidei Chachamim, over to this area of Giva, where the Aron Kodesh was itself. Not everybody went straight to the Aron Kodesh. They were waiting for the Aron Kodesh to come. Maybe the other people were there as well. There's a bunch of things over there. There's another good thing over here. Do you guys see the name? Asher Nikra, it was called Shame, Shame, Hashem Tzvakos Yoshev Akruvim Alav. Really strange, right? Why does it say shame twice? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name was exalted among all the peoples. That's one of the answers that's given, right? It's also because it's possible that since the second pair of luchos were along with the first pair of luchos in that arun, there's machlokas about that, but it's possible both pairs of luchos were there. So it's shame, shame, Hashem Tzvakos, that both of the pairs of luchos were there, and a hint to that. Either way, this is something that I have no idea about. Why in the world would the Arun all of a sudden be called Shem Shem Hashem Tzvakos Yoshev Akruvim Alav? Why would it be called that all of a sudden here over any other place? I don't know.
So it was in Kiryas Yarim?
Right now it was near Kiryas Yarim.
It was, but it wasn't in Hebron with him for the last 7 years?
No, because he left it there where it was when they brought the Arun back by the times of the Pelishtim. By Yarkivu es Arun Elokim ala Gala Chadasha. They mounted it, they rode the Arun Elokim by a new wagon. By Yisau mi beis Avinadav, and they carried it from the house of Avinadav, Asher b'Giva, they lived in Giva. The Uza v'Achyo b'nei Avinadav, and Uza and Achyo, the sons of Avinadav, Nohagim z'Agalach Adasha, they led the brand new wagon. This was a massive mistake. Everybody knows from the Chumash itself that it was clear you carried the Aron Kodesh on top of the shoulders. The Aron Kodesh had badim. They never made another Aron Kodesh. It had badim, it had poles, which were clearly made for carrying it. Why would they have put it on top of a wagon in order to carry there? After all, you're carrying it anyway to put it on the wagon, right? You have to carry it in order to put it on the wagon.
Unless it floated.
So what were they thinking? Even if it did float, somebody has to touch it. Even if there was, there must have been a wait. There must have been somebody who was taller. Somebody had to, and if not, wait. Don't do it now. Wait until somebody is taller. It has to be that something is wrong with what was going over here. Some say it was the same wagon the Plishtim used. And therefore, David Mel said, well, if the Plishtim used it and it worked, right, the wagon was run, then that should be okay. But that's so silly. I mean, oh, come on. The Plishtim did that because they knew they couldn't carry it. So the Kohanim... David HaMelech had Kohanim, he had Levium. What in the world was going on over here? It could be that there was a mistake as well. It could be that that new wagon was built, the new wagon that was built by the Pelishtim was being used by the Levium, right, in order to transport things from one to the other, right? It could be that they used this now to be able to use the Aron Kodesh because it was still owned by the Levium. But there's no question this was a massive, massive mistake. How did he make this mistake? How could he forget the Pesukim in the Torah? Chazal say that David HaMelech one time called the Torah Zmiros, songs. as if all to him it was like songs. Now, he meant that as a praise. Like, the Torah to me, I sing the praises of the Torah. I sing it like I would Zmiros. And that's an awesome praise. But calling it Zmiros Hayuli Chukecha, this is in Telem Kufya Tess, and if you want to go search for it, by the Zion, right? By the Zions in the Kufya Tess over there, that was a mistake, and it caused him to forget the most simple mistake that anyone can have. I personally think, you know, the emperor had the emperor's new clothes, you know, that storybook, whatever it is. I kind of have a feeling that story is based on what happened over here. Like, a little kid looked at the Aron Kodesh being brought in wagons and like turned to his father and was just like, wait, you can't carry it on a wagon. You can't carry it on a wagon. And everybody's like, oh, we don't want to say anything to the king. Nobody else was willing to say anything. But one kid, like, what about, just like, I just learned this. You can't do this. What's going on here? It's such a pella that this mistake was made over here.
The author of the story did not base it on this.
Never know. Never know. There are a couple explanations as to what David Melech's thought process was. There are a couple over here. Number one, he thought that maybe the only time you carry it on your shoulders is when you're transporting it from its regular place, but not when you're bringing it from somewhere else. Since he was bringing it from the house of Abinadab to the, you know, to where it was going to be, maybe you didn't have to do it on your shoulders itself. It could be also
in the Midbar also.
I'm sorry?
It was made in the Midbar because they were traveling.
Yeah, and that's obvious. Maybe it didn't apply back then. But number two, it could be that since at the time this Aron only had the fragments of the Luchos and not the regular Luchos, he felt you didn't have to carry it by shoulder. What happened to the regular Luchos? If you'll remember, we have another Medrash that when the original Aron was taken by the Plishtim, right, when Eli's sons were killed, Shaul HaMelech fought with Gullius and grabbed the actual Luchos out of the Aron and ran back with them to Eli HaKohen. If that Medrash is correct, and that's what happened, then that means that in the Aron Kodesh currently, there were only the broken Luchos.
Or
the other Luchos were already wherever the temporary Mishkan was set up. Yeah.
Or they never cleaned it up and there were the rats and the hemorrhoids.
The rats and the hemorrhoids were for sure there. The Argaz is for sure there.
So that means like he must have maybe...
Not
like,
in the Aron though. No, it's on the side of the Aron.
So maybe he thought, he figured like, we haven't cleaned it off yet. It's, you know, it's not where its status is where it's supposed to be, so let's just throw it on the wagon.
Hmm.
How come when we decorate our Aron, we always put like 10 commandments, we never put rats and hemorrhoids? That was actually in the Mishka. Or,
probably because we don't know what it looks like and it would look silly.
We know what rats and hemorrhoids. We know what rats look like. Hemorrhoids ask a GI.
The rats. The rats and the hemorrhoids. When the Plishtim took the Aron Kodesh, they had rats biting them and hemorrhoids that came from the Aron Kodesh. So when they brought the Aron Kodesh back, they brought a treasure box filled with golden rats and golden hemorrhoids. And whatever a hemorrhoid looks like.
As tributes,
yeah. So why we don't have that on our Aron Kodesh, I'm pretty sure we understand the reason for it.
Like, but they left the box in the Aron.
Yeah, even so, I don't think I'm going to put it up there. There was a second Aron. Bezalel made an Aron, which we definitely have, and then the Aron Kodesh that Moshe made to house the temporary broken tablets may have been a second Aron. There's a kasha about that. There may have been a second Aron. We're going with the fact that there probably was only one. I will tell you over here, there is a third answer. It could be that David felt it was a greater Kiddush Hashem to transport it in the Aron Kodesh that was in the wagon that was made by the Plishtim. So that people could say, why is it being traveled by a wagon? Oh, because the Plishtim couldn't handle the Aron Kodesh. Maybe he thought that was his justification, but it was not right.
Could it be that the Aron was never taken off of the wagon? And it was still on the wagon, so they just didn't want to...
It's very possible. Yeah, you know what? You're right. Because I said before, maybe they had to carry it to put it on the wagon. You're right. Maybe it just remained on the wagon the entire time. Right? And they just carried the wagon. I'm sorry?
You said it was 10 years
ago? More than that, really. At least 7. And before Shaul HaMelech was made king, at least 10. At least 10. How many years it was, we have to question how long Shaul HaMelech was king for. But that's about it. And then the other thing could it be that, as you just said, that carrying it by the children of Kahas only applied in the desert, but it didn't apply right over here. The two Arons thing, the Miamlois also brings up over here, it's possible that there were two different Arons, so he thought that there were different statuses, right? Maybe there were two different statuses. Either way.
Did the Levim know which house they came from at this point? Merari Yitzhar?
Yes, only because David HaMelech made the Mishmaros very soon after this. So they must have known because they separated Kos, Merari, and Gershon into six and six. Oh, right. Yeah, because they had 18 Mishmaros by the time of David until they made 24 by Shlomo HaMelech. So yeah, they had to have known something. They transported from the house of Avinadav that was in Giva together with the Aron Elohim. Right, Achyo holik lefnei Aron. Achyo went in front of the Aron Kodesh, and that means that what's his name? That Uzzah was on the side of what was over there. There's interesting, by the way, the fact that it says over here, it says, Im Aron Elohim, Chazal Darshim from over there, they carried it with, is referring to the Argaz, that treasure box of the Pelishtim that had the golden whatever it is, that was brought over here. So we already said this, but I'm just going over it. There are six Averos that were mentioned over here. Number one, they didn't put it on their shoulders, they put it in a wagon. Number two, they took away the opportunity of the Levium to carry the Aron Kodesh. Number three, Achya and Uzo, instead of giving the animals free rein, which is what the Pelishtim did, they said to the animals, you do whatever you want to do, they led it, which is wrong. It's as if the Aron Kodesh doesn't know where to go, and they have to help the Aron Kodesh get to its right place. Number four, they touched everything with their bare hands. They did not use the badim of the Aron Kodesh. They touched the actual thing. Number five, Achyo walked in front with his back to the Aron Kodesh, which was completely disrespectful. Even the Pelishtim walked facing the Aron Kodesh with the Aron Kodesh in front of them, and they walked behind it. And number six, there was not an appropriate measure of awe together with the joy that they had for it. There was simcha, there wasn't enough yira, and therefore there was something wrong over here. It could be that they also failed to use the right musical instruments to bring about what they needed over here. David Chol B'Yisrael Misachim Livnei Hashem. David and all B'nai Yisrael were playing in front of Hashem. The Chol Atzei Broshim with all different types of cypress instruments, B'kinoros V'Nevalim, together with harps and cymbals, I don't know, B'tupim V'Binanim, B'Tzeltzelim, whatever these things are, they're using all the different things that they had over here, juggling and whatever it is, and they did a bunch of stuff right over there. David HaMelech also noticed the people were playing with the Aron Kodesh. They were staring at the Aron Kodesh. And he said, I want them to look at me rather than the Aron. So he did a lot of things to attract their attention. And Uzzah put his hand out to the Aron Elohim to stop it from falling by Yochez Bo, and he grabbed onto it. He shumped to a bucker because the axon had allowed it to slip. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu got angry at Uzzah, by Akehu Shem Elokim, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu destroyed him there, Al Ashal, right at that area. Le'am Hashem Aron Elokim, and he died there, right by the Aron Elokim itself. Interesting of what happened over here.
Yeah, it seems a bit harsh. He meant well. Yeah. It's a reflex.
Yep. Now, we're going to have to go into what exactly happened over here. Nachon is an interesting place. Goren Nachon. Nachon obviously means accurate or exact, right? A place that is correct. All the grains there had been properly tithed. All the chumas and maestros had been set aside. The oxen let the Aron Elohim slip when they bent down to eat from the threshing floor. The oxen were imbued with a higher spirit. They would not eat anything that wasn't properly tithed, that wasn't properly with mice or chumos. So therefore, they went down right over there. When that happened, the Aron was never going to be affected by it. Uzzah should have realized the Aron carries those who carry it. Even if the oxen moved, even if it looked like the Aron was going to slip, there was no reason for him to touch the Aron. You want to put your hand out so that if it falls, you can grab it. That's one thing. To put your hand on the Aron for it not to fall is absolutely wrong, and he could not do that, and he definitely should have known it. Chazal say he even saw that the Aron was hanging in the air, and he knew it wasn't falling and it wasn't slipping, but he used it as an opportunity. I can touch the Aron. And he used it as an opportunity to put his hand on top of it. And such a thing is punishable by death. Just for gazing at the Aron, 50,000 people in Beit Shemesh were killed. Remember, 50,070 people. This is actually touching it. The rest of Bnei Yisrael were nowhere around. Just like in the Midbar, people stood 2,000 amos away from the Aron. The only people who were near was Uzzah and there. In the Midbar, yes. That was the other thing, that it wasn't covered properly and people were staring at it. David Melech was wrong in that. I find it weird that in the next pasuk, when it says the word Vayichar Af Hashem, right, usually the word Vayichar Af only appears when we're talking about Avodah Zarah. I don't know what that means, but perhaps Uzzah treated it almost like a godly thing, as if there was a, I don't know, almost like he treated it as if it's a avodah zarah. It's possible there was something not like, I'm not sure, but it is something that's a little bit strange. Chazal say, although Uzzah was punished horribly and he died, nonetheless, he was with the Aron Elokim. He did get his chelik in Olam Haba, because even though he did the wrong thing, he was helping for the glory of Hashem, and he had spent many years before this serving in front of the Aron with true reverence, and he never did anything wrong. He made a mistake, he was killed immediately. Nonetheless, that's what happened over here. There is a Rishon, by the way, I don't know who it is, who says that Uzzah was punished for wearing sandals while helping the Aron Kodesh be going through. That was not the proper thing to do. He should not have been wearing sandals at the time.
So not to wear any shoes?
He should have been wearing either no shoes at all or proper shoes, I guess, to be able to go through.
Proper sandals, they have sandals.
Well, they did have closed sandals. They had, what's it called? The na'al. They had a na'al. Perhaps that was the more appropriate thing that he should have been wearing at the time.
Well, makes no shoe?
I don't know, but it comes from the word al-hashal, because shal ne'alecha me'al-reglecha is taking off your shoes, so it was an inappropriate thing that he had on his foot itself. But I'll tell you honestly, I didn't see the Rishon inside. I'm quoting it from the Miam Loez over here, and I don't know what it says exactly. I'd like to see it inside, but I couldn't find the Rishon. When I looked in the Mikros Gedolos before, I couldn't find it. So I'm not sure where he's getting it from, and I'd like to see it. It might have been the Abarbanel. I didn't have an Abarbanel at home, so it might have been that. But that's the other thing that's mentioned over here. Vayichol David. David got upset, right? Alashar paretz Hashem paretz b'Uzzah, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu breached through Uzzah, right? Vayichol l'makom hu paretz Uzzah. How do you almost say? He called the area paretz Uzzah up until this very day. Now, it's not that he was angry at Hashem for what happened over here. He understood that obviously Hashem had something over here. He was anguished because he said, whoa, what did I do wrong to deserve this to happen to me? What did I do wrong? And he looked back and he was angry at no one but himself. This was my idea. I was the one who made the decision to bring it on top of a wagon. I'm the one who told Paritz and, Uzzah and what's his name? And who was the other brother? Achio, to go in front of it. He was angry at himself for making this decision and making a major, major decision. Because Uzzah was such a great person who cared about the Aaron's welfare, they named the place after him. That shows you, again, he was not a bad guy. He made a bad decision at that moment, but that's the idea behind it.
Were they from Yehuda?
They were not from, they were from Shevet Yehuda. Vayir David as Hashem Bayomahu, David feared God on that day. Vayomar Ech Yavo Eli Aron Hashem, how could the Aron come to me on such a day where I don't have the same level of Ava that I had before? The level of David HaMelech's service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu throughout is through Chasidus, which comes through love. There was no question it was a higher level than one gets through Yira. Not a normal level of just fear of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It was Ava Hashem, true Ava of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And at that point, David HaMelech did not feel the level of Ava that he needed to have. Once he had gone down a little bit, he said, I can't be there. This is a little bit differently. So he says, Lo Ava David Lohasarei Love Aron Hashem Al Yir David. So David did not want to bring to himself the Aron Hashem by Yir David, by Yateu David base Oved Edom Hagiti. So he brought it instead to Oved Edom Hagiti. Now we already mentioned Itai Hagiti, and we mentioned before that Itai Hagiti was a non-Jew who came from the land of Gas. Oved Edom was a Jew, even though his name is Oved Edom, server of Edom, right? He was still a Jew. He was a Levi who lived in Gas. He was called Oved Edom because he served HaKadosh Baruch Hu properly. He served HaKadosh Baruch Hu properly, and he reddened other people's faces in embarrassment by his Avdus Hashem. So he's an Oved Hashem, an Edom in that, those sort of thing. However, some people say something different. Anybody want to take a guess at what Navi this may have been? Oved Edom? Ovadia. Because Ovadia was from Edom, and that would be really strange. Now, we do think we know who Ovadia is, because Ovadia, although some of the Treyas, we don't know exactly when they lived, like Tzfania or Yoel, right? We may not have known exactly when they lived. Ovadia, we seem pretty clear, lived by the times of Achav. And that was 250 to 300 years after this. It would be, again, unlikely that somebody lived that long at this time when people were living about 70, 80. So Obed Edom is interesting because Ovadia was a Ger Tzedek from Edom, So Obed Edom.
We know that he was a ger, or he came from gerim from Edom.
Ovadia, I believe it says he was a ger tzedek, right? I'd have to look it up, but I believe it was said he was a ger tzedek. Ovadia, yeah. And that's why he prophesied about Edom. Other gerim? Rus. Was Rus a Nevi'ah? If Rus was a Nevi'ah, then Rus. But I don't know if we have too many other examples. Rahab never was. I'd have to check, but I don't think so. Not offhand. I don't think so. But some say that it was Ovadia. I will tell you that the word Obed Edom, Ovadia's from Edom, definitely the names sound similar. So there might be something that's similar about them, even if it's not the same person. There may be something similar about them in some way, shape, or form. We have absolutely no idea. Chazal say that this is a kal v'chomer that he drew. If Uzzah, who was a tzaddik, still nonetheless was punished for what he did, how could I expect anything more than that? What's going to happen to me? See, realize, I hadn't prepared a special place for the Aron Kodesh in Yerushalayim yet. I don't know where it's even going to go. I just wanted to bring the Aron in because it was time, but maybe I'm doing something wrong here. Let's keep it by Oved Edom for now, and we'll see what happens from there. Vayeshev Aron Hashem beis Oved Edom Agiti Shlosha Hadashim. It stayed with the house of Oved Edom Agiti for 3 months. Vayevarach Hashem is Oved Edom v'esko beis Hashem blessed Oved Edom as entire house. I will tell you, it is not easy to have an Aron Kodesh inside your house. That is not an easy thing to do. Obed Edom was blessed with 62 grandchildren. 62 children and grandchildren in his house. During this time, I don't know if it's 3 months, but over a period of time altogether. But that is an absolute, we're dealing with something.
It makes sense because the gestation is longer than 3 months.
For most people. Maybe they were just like, but it seems that there was a special bracha that was given to him. Now, I don't want to say this, but like, I don't know if I would be the happiest with 6 kids born at one time to all 8 of my children and grandchildren having all 6.
Well, if it was your children,
not positive.
They're not living in your house.
Right. But back then, I think they kind of did. I don't know, but it would be amazing to see such a thing and to know what was going on. But either way, we'll stop with that for right now. What's going to happen after Obed Edom was blessed in this way? There's a tremendous bracha for him to get. We'll stop with that.